بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We will start discussing the guided caves. Traditionally, these were the four heads of state. Following Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, I think some insight in the background is essential. When Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala sent Prophet Muhammad to be the seal of the prophets, the last of the prophets, and Prophet Muhammad ministered for about 23 years. And I would like to call to attention that Prophet Muhammad was carrying over more than his role as prophet. In matters of religion, he was the prophet conveying a message from God. And on this note, he couldn't have gone into error, because he was the very honest messenger, honestly delivering the message from the Creator to the created. But beside that role, as the Prophet himself told us, that on matters other than those of religion, he was just an ordinary human being, with his share of culture, his share of insight, his share of intelligence, his share as of doing things to the best of his ability. And this shows, when at one time he found the farmers of Medina climbing up the date trees in order to pollinate them, as the practice was, and he asked about that. He comes from Mecca, the very desert city, to Medina, which was an oasis kind of, with agriculture and with lots of date forests, etc., etc. So they told him, "We are pollinating the date trees." And he said, "Well, I think whatever will happen, will happen." And so they took it as a directive from the Prophet that they shouldn't do that. So they didn't. And when it was season and the harvest proved very poor, they went to him. "How come you tell us it wouldn't make a difference?" "And it made a difference, and the harvest is very poor." He said, "Ah, you should know that what I tell you in the way of religion is perfect, should be taken, and is binding to you. Otherwise, in my capacity as an ordinary human being, beside the prophethood, I am just a man who thinks. And these professional things of your life, you know better than I do." And another example, the Prophet dispatched his army on the eve of the Battle of Badr in a certain way, wherein one of his companions went to ask him, "Is this revelation from Allah, this deployment plan, the military plan, a revelation from Allah, or is it just your own opinion?" In a way, they asked him, "Is this plan, part of the religion? Or is it from you as a thinking human being? And when he said, no, I'm just a human being thinking to the best of my ability, his companion told him, I don't think this is the most promising plan, and I would suggest that we poise our soldiers at the farthest well from us, and we build a tent for you to stay in, and we block the other wells to deny our enemies access, etc., etc. And the Prophet said, it sounds good. It looks better than the plan I had drawn. And the Prophet took his companion's advice on that. Well, the Prophet did his best and then died. And by his death, his two capacities died. One was the capacity as the Prophet, and one was the capacity as a human being who also happened to be the head of state at the time. For a Prophet to come after him is impossible, because the Quran tells us that he was the last of the Prophets. And yet the state was in need of a head of state. And so there was an urgent need to find someone to follow the Prophet, not as Prophet, because there is no Prophet after Muhammad, but as head of state. The second thing I would like to draw attention to is that I'm describing history that happened 1400 years ago. And you should always have this adjustment, because if you judge things of 1400 years ago by the standards of the 20th century, you will certainly fall into error. So you should consider the social condition, the customs at that time, the patterns of that society and its features, in order to contain yourself and don't feel very surprised if things are just different from what we have been acquainted with for the 20th century. Therefore, expect that the people who became heads of state after the Prophet were not prophets, and therefore that sanctity of their opinions in religious affairs was not like that of the Prophet, because the Prophet received the revelation from Allah, and no direct revelation from Allah would ever come after Prophet Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam. Therefore, they were human beings acting to the best of their abilities, without Jibreel coming down to tell them what to do. We Muslims resent being called Muhammadans, because we would like to relate ourselves to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. We are the nation of God. And those who followed Muhammad alayhi salatu wasalam, therefore, should be studied as human beings who were known at their excellence in religion and their high status in the community and the high regard by the Muslims. When the Prophet ﷺ died, two very significant incidents happened before his death, in the latter part of his life. We know that when he conquered Mecca and conquered Arabia, and Islam became the prevailing system, well, the masses hurried into Islam just because it was the new system. It was the prevailing system. without necessarily having been taught by the Prophet himself or prepared by the Prophet himself. And therefore many of them went into Islam, maybe politically, maybe administratively, maybe socially. Some of them felt the flame of Iman and the faith in their hearts, but others did not. And the Quran gives us a hint to that. There is a verse in the Quran that says, قَالَتِ الْأَعْرَابُ آمَنَّا قُلْ لَمْ تُؤْمِنُوا وَلَكِنْ قُولُوا أَسْلَمْنَا وَلَمَّا يَدْخُلِ الْإِيمَانُ فِي قُلُوبِكُمْ. Even before the Prophet died, the Quran would say, the Bedouin said, we have attained to faith. Say no. You have not attained to faith. You better say, we became Muslims. Muslim means surrender. We surrendered. We follow the new regime. But faith is yet to enter into your hearts. And therefore, with the latter onrush of people into Islam, there were people whose hearts were dilute, not as firm in Islam as those who took it before Islam conquered, and especially those who took it in its early days, when to be a Muslim was certainly a liability and a threat to yourself. In the latter part of the life of the Prophet, two things happened. The one was the beginning of an assault on Islam by the Roman Empire. When Arabia was unified under Islam, the two major powers of the time, the Persian Empire and the Roman Empire, were very much dismayed for the birth of a political power on their backyard. And they resented Islam. Of course, we remember that when the Prophet sent his message to the Kisra, Khusro of Persia, and he tore the message and humiliated the messenger of the Prophet, etc. And the Prophet said, may Allah tear down his kingdom. And they used to use their puppet Arab tribes living at their borders, Al-Manawira, who were Arabs but they didn't go into Islam, and they utilized them to harass the Muslims and interrupt their caravans, etc. And the same thing happened on the Roman side of the map, where the Roman Empire, who were at the time Christians, used the puppet Arab tribes called Al-Ghassasina in order to attack Islam and harass the caravans, etc., etc. And at one time the Prophet knew and got the news that the Roman Empire was preparing a massive army in order to attack Arabia and the heartland of Islam, in order to nip it in the bud and get their conscience clear about that thing called Islam. For that the Prophet sent an army of 3,000 people. He named the three military leaders, one to succeed the other if killed, and he sent them. Now the 3,000 went and found out that they were to face 100,000 army, and they paused to think. Some said, we have to go whatever it takes. Others said, we have to think and use our minds, and if there is no reasonable prospect of us winning, then we better go back and come again when we are more ready to face them. Unfortunately, the leader at the time said, well, if we miss the victory, we will gain martyrdom. We are the Muslims, we are the faithful, We don't care for their numbers or our numbers, and on we go. That seems to be the over-enthusiastic opinion, not with the emotion, etc., etc. He said forward, and they went, and they were defeated. And that leader was killed. The following one whom the Prophet had named was killed. And the third one whom the Prophet had named was also killed. And there was a vacuum. And one of the geniuses of Islamic military history stepped in to lead, to fill up the vacuum and to lead the Muslim army. With perfect maneuvering, he moved the right part of the army this way and the left part this way, etc., to make the other side think that there is help coming and further troops coming, etc. And he could manage one of the best military retreats history has ever recorded. And when they came back to Medina, the Prophet was very pleased with them, although the masses in the streets and the children used to cry at them, deserters, deserters, and despise them, etc., etc. But the Prophet commended them, and certainly it was the thing to do at the time. Then the Prophet thought, when he heard again that they are again amassing an army at the borders, he prepared another army led by the man who was at one time the adoptee of Prophet Muhammad, before adoption was banned in its current sense. The Prophet himself led an army before that, and when he went, he didn't find the enemy, so he came back. And hearing that there was another army being prepared to attack, he prepared that army under the leadership of Zayd ibn Haritha. This was one part of the scene in the latter part of the life of Prophet Muhammad ﷺ. Another thing happened when the Prophet took ill. The English say took ill, became ill, and he got a message from a man in Arabia called Musaylama, offering a treaty. Let us share the prophethood. You are prophet for this part of Arabia, and I'm prophet for that part of Arabia. Of course, the Prophet refused that, and then the sequence of events was that the Prophet ﷺ became ill, his final illness, and died. The death of the Prophet was an extreme shock to the Muslims, to such an extent that a solid person like Umar ibn al-Khattab would draw his sword and go out crying, "Whoever says that Muhammad is killed, I'll kill him with my sword." Muhammad was raised up by God as Jesus was. But the man who set the record straight was an even more solid personality in Islam, of course, and this was Abu Bakr, who said, "O people, whoever worshipped Muhammad, Muhammad is dead. But whoever worshipped Allah, Allah is alive, Allah does not die." And he read to them the verse of the Quran that says, "وَمَا مُحَمَّدٌ إِلَّا رَسُولٌ قَدْ خَلَتْ مِنْ قَبْلِهِ الرُّسُلِ أَفَإِنْ مَاتَ أَوْ قُتِلْ إِنْقَلَبْتُمْ عَلَىٰ أَعْقَابِكُمْ وَمَنْ يَنْقَلِبْ عَلَىٰ عَقِبَيْهِ فَلَنْ يَضُرَّ اللَّهَ شَيْئًا وَسَيَجْزِي اللَّهُ الشَّاكِرِينَ." this verse of the Quran says, Muhammad is none but a messenger from Allah, preceded by many messengers from Allah. If he then dies or is killed, you turn your backs to Islam, and whoever turns his back will hurt Allah in no way, will never hurt Allah. فَلَمْ يَضُرُّ اللَّهَ شَيْئًا And Allah will support those who remain thankful for the gift of Islam. And when Abu Bakr said this, Umar was kind of a stupefied person who was just waking up. And he said, yes, it is in the Quran, but when Abu Bakr said it, it was as though it was the first time I hear it. This settled the immediate shock, and then came the question of preparing the Prophet alayhi salatu wasalam for burial, washing and burial, etc., etc. But a very pressing thing presented itself to the stage of events. The head of state died. There must be another head of state, and the question cried for an answer, who would be the head of state? At that time, the Ansar were the people of Medina, the hosts who received the Muhajirin, who fled to them, the immigrants who fled to them from Mecca. And Al-Ansar held a meeting in some kind of a tent, presided over by their chief Sa'd ibn Ubadah, and he told them, the Prophet is dead, there has to be a head of state. You are the Ansar. It was you who sheltered the Muhajirin. It was to you that the Prophet fled Mecca to come to you. It was with your swords that the Prophet was protected and supported. And therefore, the Khalifa, the Caliph, the successor of the Prophet should be one of you. And they found that very logic. At which time Omar got news of that meeting. And he felt very uncomfortable about it. So he sent someone to call Abu Bakr from the house of the Prophet, where he and Ali and others were busy preparing for the burial of the Prophet. And Abu Bakr said, tell him I'm busy with the Prophet. And he said, no, you must come. And when he came out to Omar told him, a very serious thing is happening. The Ansar have a meeting and they are considering filling the post of president by one of them just unilaterally. And we should go, you should go and see what you can do for that. On their way to that meeting, they met another Sahabi called Abu Ubaidah. And they went to the meeting of Al-Ansar. And there was some challenge on part of the Ansar. And Omar wanted to speak, but Abu Bakr stopped him. And Abu Bakr called them, you are the Ansar. You are the people who sheltered the Prophet. You are the people who supported the Prophet. Your service to Islam is undeniable, of course. It is thanks to your efforts that Islam could live and survive and conquer Arabia. But there are other things to consider. And he told them, we are the Muhajirin, the first to accept Islam from the Prophet. And we are those who tasted the persecution in Mecca for 13 years. And we are the people who fled their homes and their wealth and their possessions in order to come to you with the Prophet. and the Prophet, Alhamdulillah, guided you to Iman and to Islam. But Sa'd ibn Ubadah answered, don't listen to him. And somebody suggested, well, what he says makes sense, so if they insist, let there be one from us and one from them. That is, the caliph would be a duality, one from the Ansar and one from the Muhajirin. But then somebody, someone from them, from the Ansar, told them, beware of selecting a caliph from the Ansar. Because before Islam, the Ansar were two tribes with a history of perpetual war between them. And they told them, if you select one of Al-Khazraj, that is one of the two tribes, then the house will feel bad about it. And the previous enemy might be evoked again. And if the Khazraj take it, it will remain with them all the time. And he said to them, it is not only that, it has the geopolitical situation of the time, he told them, the Arab tribes of the Arab Peninsula will never give allegiance to another tribe than Quraysh, the tribe of Prophet Muhammad ﷺ, which was true. All the tribes were almost equals and they expressed their pride over one another, etc. But Quraysh universally was accepted to be the tribe number one in Arabia. And so he told them it has to be in Quraysh. Then one of the Ansar told them, oh Ansar, we have chosen Islam not for the kingdom, not to gain anything. Allah sent us the gift of the Prophet and we became Muslims and we should be grateful for it. It is not for worldly gains that we accepted Islam. We didn't fight with Prophet Muhammad so that a day will come when we wanted to be paid for that. No. We became Muslims for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this should be the consideration. And then they calmed down because this was very logic. If a tribe of the Ansar takes it, the other tribe would fight. If any other tribe than Quraysh takes it, then the other tribes would not give their allegiance. And then Abu Bakr told them, well, I have Abu Ubaidah, I have Umar ibn al-Khattab, whoever you choose, do, so that I can give my allegiance to him. And Umar said, no, we cannot put ourselves before you in this respect, because you were the first ever man to take up Islam from the Prophet. Because you were his companion on the Hijra. Because the Quran has mentioned you, ثَانِيَ اثْنَيْنِ ظُلْمَ فِي الْغَرَانِ, one of two as they were in the cave of Hira. And therefore Umar said, extend your hand to me to give you the pledge. Which Abu Bakr did. Umar gave the pledge, Abu Ubaidah gave the pledge, all those present gave the pledge. And this crisis was settled. But I have to add that there were not only the two opinions of Ansar or Quraysh, the Prophet Muhajirin, there was a third opinion. Not Ansar, not Muhajirin. Not any Muhajirin. Not Ansar, not Muhajirin. Not any Muhajirin, but Quraysh in particular. And then the third opinion was, not Quraysh generally, but the house of Hashim in particular. That is, not only the tribe of the Prophet, but it should be that part of the tribe of the Prophet which constituted the household of the Prophet, the very narrow branch from which the Prophet was. And at the time, there was the Prophet's uncle, there were two sons of Abu Talib, and obviously the choice was Ali ibn Abi Talib, because the other brother was not, did not have the track record in Islam as Ali ibn Abi Talib. And so there was the opinion that the caliph should be Ali ibn Abi Talib. But what happened is that I told you a caliph was appointed. Those who wanted it in anyone at large report the hadith of the Prophet. If Salim Mawla bin Hudayfa, a slave who was freed, were alive, I would have appointed him as my caliph. So it meant the caliphate was an open thing, it was not an inheritance. And yet, geopolitical facts necessitated that it be from Quraysh. And the third opinion was there, as evidenced by when Abu Bakr went out, he was given the pledge by those present, but he went out in order, he sought people, he went to people, do you agree or no, do you agree or no, do you agree or no, to make sure that everybody agreed with him. And it is reported that Ali was not prompt in giving his allegiance. He stayed behind for some time. But later on, he gave the allegiance and he became one of the most loyal advisors to Abu Bakr. When Abu Bakr became caliph, he gave his first speech, that is the classic, and is part of the teachings of Islam as universally accepted by the scholars. It was something like the State of the Union, new president giving a speech, and it was, Ya ayyuha al-nas, qad walitu alaykum wa lastu bi khayrikum, you people, I've been chosen to rule you, although I am not the best of you. If I do good, then support me. If I do bad, then correct me. The strongest amongst you is the weakest before me, until I take the rights of people from him. And the weakest amongst you is the strongest with me, until I return back his rights to him. Obey me as long as I obey Allah. If I disobey Allah, then you owe me no obedience. And this last statement made the post of head of state a conditioned post. It was not an open mandate. It was conditioned. So long as I am good, help me, but when I become bad, you don't owe me any obedience. And this school, I think, can well be involved in our present times. And if so, it might have constitutional repercussions in many of the Muslim countries. Now, who is Abu Bakr? He was the closest friend of Prophet Muhammad ﷺ. He was 2 years younger than Prophet Muhammad, but they joined at the sixth grandfather. When Muhammad invited him to become a Muslim, he promptly accepted. And the Prophet says, whoever I invited to Islam had to give it a little thought, except Abu Bakr, he promptly accepted. And because of this, and because of Abu Bakr's stand at the Isra and the Ma'raj, when the Quraysh told him, your friend claims that he went up to heaven, etc. And immediately, if he said so, then he's saying the truth. And that is why Abu Bakr is called Abu Bakr as-Siddiq. Siddiq is the derivation from Siddiq, which is truth. Abu Bakr was instrumental in the Islam of many of the major Sahaba, like Uthman ibn Affan and others. It was one of his customs before Islam prevailed to go and seek the slaves who accepted Islam, and their masters were torturing them, and to go and buy them at a very high price in order to set them free and deliver them from torture by their masters. The most famous example, of course, is Bilal. Bilal, who later became, he was a slave and until Abu Bakr bought him. And as you know, the Kafirs used to put him in the burning sun. You think that Los Angeles is hot, no wonder it's hot these days, but go to Arabia in the heat of the summer where you could cook an egg on the sand, where it would be impossible to touch the steering wheel of the car. And on that burning sand, they used to lay Bilal with a very heavy stone over his chest, and commanding him to renounce Muhammad and give up his Islam. But constantly and persistently he would say, Ahad, Ahad, he is the one, he is the one. Abu Bakr never drank, even before Islam. We know Islam prohibited liquor, drink. We know that a man like Omar used to drink before he became a Muslim. But Abu Bakr, out of his sheer consideration, if I drink, I might lose my sanity, my judgment, etc. So out of self-respect, he never drank alcohol in the Jahiliyyah before Islam. He was a man of his promise. And I'll tell you about a story that is very illustrative of that. We know that the daughter of Abu Bakr was Aisha, and we know that at one time the Prophet ﷺ proposed to Aisha and married her. But then somebody else already had proposed to Aisha, somebody in Mecca, who were not Muslims, of course. And there was the situation when somebody proposed to Aisha and the Prophet proposed to Aisha. And yet Abu Bakr saw it fit and ethical to go to that family who proposed to his daughter before giving his acceptance to Prophet Muhammad alayhi salam wa sallam. And he went and asked them, well, you have mentioned my daughter, are you still wanting her? And fortunately for everyone, the mother of the fiancé said, oh no, no, we fear that if our son marries your daughter, she would brainwash him into accepting Islam. No, we don't want your daughter. And that is how the way became clear for the Prophet to marry Aisha. We pause here to think. One of the things you read for the critics of Islam, that criticize Islam, etc. How come the Prophet would marry Aisha when she was just a child, aged 11? Although some of the scholars, who's our friend now? Who's our friend in the class? Yes, Dr. Hashimi. had his, in his PhD thesis, he had proof that Aisha was 17 when the Prophet married her. But even if she was younger, then the fact that somebody else than the Prophet had already proposed to her is indication that she might have attained a womanhood at an early age. And people try to image the Prophet as a brute and a heartless man in, to marry a child like that. But this fact of history, that before the Prophet she was approached by someone else, speaks on the on Aisha's behalf being a mature woman when she was given to the Prophet. About Abu Bakr also, the Prophet والسلام, once saw a dream that he was carrying a basin of milk and he drank it and some milk remained that he gave Abu Bakr to drink. And the feature of the dream was that, as the Prophet concurred, it must be knowledge from Allah that you took the majority of and you gave Abu Bakr part of it. Abu Bakr was fair even against himself. And it happened that once Abu Bakr got furious from a person and he talked to him harshly. Then Abu Bakr regretted it and went to the man and asked him to return the insult. But the man wouldn't. So Abu Bakr was extremely frustrated. He wants to clear himself. And he insisted that the man would avenge by calling Abu Bakr names or talking to him harshly, etc. But the man wouldn't. And Abu Bakr says, if you want, I'll go and complain to the Prophet ﷺ. And he went to the Prophet and he said, I was rude to that man and I want him to be rude to me so that I feel free, I feel vindicated. And the Prophet called the man and said, well, don't be rude to Abu Bakr, but say, may Allah forgive you, Abu Bakr. Omar used to say, Abu Bakr is the best of us. We never competed with him, but he was better than any of us. And he reports one day he went to the mosque for the early morning prayer, and the Prophet asked them, who amongst you is fasting today? They remained silent. Omar remained silent. Abu Bakr said, me, Prophet of Allah. Then the Prophet said, who went and visited a sick person today? And Omar said, well, we are still in the mosque, we haven't prayed yet. We haven't gone out yet. But Abu Bakr said, well, on my way, I knew that our friend so-and-so was sick, so I called at his home and visited him. Then the Prophet asked, who gave something for a charity today? And Omar said, Prophet of Allah, the day has not begun yet. But Abu Bakr said, I was coming with my son, and there was a loaf of bread with my son, and someone came begging and asking for help. So I took the bread from my son and gave it to him. And the Prophet said to him, Abu Bakr, have the good news, you will be in paradise. You are going to paradise. You are going to paradise. Abu Bakr was at the side of the Prophet during the early years of persecution. And at one time when the Prophet sent his friends to flee to Ethiopia, telling them there is a Christian king in Ethiopia, but he is a just man who would not wrong anyone. And the Muslims, a group of Muslims fled to Ethiopia, not Abu Bakr, But later on, with the continued persecution, Abu Bakr considered fleeing to Ethiopia. But a man from the Quraysh, from the enemies, where are you going, Abu Bakr? Well, I'm going to Ethiopia. Cannot stay here anymore. And the man said, no, you are a good man, Abu Bakr. You are a kind hearted man. You are a generous man. Stay, and I give you my protection. At the time, it was the social custom that, say, if I am a member of the Islamic Center, and there is an enemy of the Islamic Center, and if he comes in, we would kill him. But someone of you, anyone, would say, I have given my protection to so-and-so. Then this would be binding to everyone, and the man can come in, and nobody would touch him. That was a social custom in Arabia at the time. And so the man said, please stay, and I put you under my protection. And come and live in my home. And Abu Bakr went and lived in his home. But in the yard, he used to pray and read the Quran. And the people came and put their ears in order to listen. They were fascinated by the Quran. And so the Quraysh went to his protector and said, no, this man will produce fitna in our people this way. And so he went to Abu Bakr and said, well, you know, you are hurting the people, they are complaining, etc. And Abu Bakr said, well, I return your protection to you. You are not my protector anymore. And he continued to read the Quran, despite the oppression that the Muslims were suffering at the time. And then, the time came when the Muslims, upon the Prophet's instructions, fled to Medina, the Hijra, the emigration. And they went undercover, so as not to be discovered. And at one time, Abu Bakr considered doing the Hijra to Medina also. But the Prophet wouldn't agree. No, Abu Bakr, not now, Abu Bakr. And the time and again, he would ask the Prophet to give his permission so that he would emigrate to Medina, but the Prophet would tell him, wait, wait, maybe we find a good companion for you. And this companion later on proved to be the Prophet himself. And when the time came for the emigration of the Prophet, he told Abu Bakr, and Abu Bakr bought two camels, and the Prophet insisted that his camel he would pay for. And the night came of the Hijra, when Ali ibn Abi Talib stayed in the bed of the Prophet so that the Kafirs would think that the Prophet is still there. And he hired a guide to the journey, and he went out with Abu Bakr. And on the way, they took shelter in a cave called the Cave of Thawr. And on the way, Abu Bakr would sometimes go in front of the Prophet, sometimes behind the Prophet. The Prophet asking him, what are you doing, Abu Bakr? Sometimes going in the front, sometimes following me. He says, sometimes I think the danger will come from the front, so I go to the front. Sometimes I think it might come from behind us, I go behind us, etc., etc. And the Hijra was a top secret at the time. Nobody knew about the Hijra except a handful of people. And specifically these were Ali, Abu Bakr, of course, he was one of them, Muhajirin, and the two daughters of Abu Bakr, Aisha and Asma, and the guide to the journey, who was not a Muslim. Sometimes people argue you, how come you buy from a Christian shop, how come you go to a Christian doctor, etc., etc. The guide of the journey, the most critical journey in the history of Islam, was not a Muslim. He was called Abdullah ibn Rakhat, and he was notorious for his honesty and trustworthiness and his knowledge of the way. And this was about it. Even the big Muslims at the time didn't know about the Hijrah, and they went into that cave with one of the daughters of Abu Bakr bringing munitions to them. And at one time when she loaded the camel with the munitions, they fell, so she wanted a rope to tie them, and she didn't find. So she took her garment and split it into two, using one as a rope and the other to cover herself. And since the time, Asma, the daughter of Abu Bakr, used to be called Asma Adatul Mutaqir, Asma of the two robes. And of course someone would go with a flock of sheep so that the hooves of the sheep would erase the footprints of the camels of the Prophet, etc. And when they went into the cave, Muhammad and Abu Bakr, one day the kafirs came and went to the cave, but they couldn't see them. And Abu Bakr would say, if you just looked in, they would have seen us. And Abu Bakr felt very terrorized, because they were there, they could hear them, etc., etc. But the Prophet would tell him, Abu Bakr, what do you think of two people whose third party is Allah himself? And Quran came to register this. إِذْ أَخْرَجَهُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا فَانِيَ اثْنَيْنِ إِذْ هُمَا فِي الْغَارِ إِذْ يَقُولُ لِصَاحِبِهِ لَا تَحْزَنْ إِنَّ اللَّهَ مَعَنَا فَأَنْزَلَ اللَّهُ سَكِينَتَهُ عَلَيْهِ. He would say to his friend, they were two in the cave, and he would say to his friend, don't feel panicky, don't feel sad, Allah is with us. So Allah showered his tranquility over them in the cave. Is it time? Well, it is time. I have a suggestion, please. You know, so far we have been attending together and enjoying the lectures, but we would like to move to be a community, not just people sitting on neighboring chairs. This doesn't make us a community. And in order to be a community, I would like to suggest to you today, and on and on and on and on, that before you leave, you make acquaintance with the one on your right and the one on your left. My name is so and so. You say, my name is so and so on the other side. Names will be forgotten. They will be forgotten once and twice and thrice and four times and 10 times and 100 times and 500 times and 1,000 times. But if you persevere, we will get to know each other by name. And this is the first step towards building a community. Because so far we are just individuals, each sitting on a chair. The chairs are more a community than us. But so please, before you leave, make it a habit to introduce yourself to your neighbors to the right and to the left. There are other steps to become a community. Later on, we titrate it little by little. والصلاة والسلام على رسول الله والحمد لله رب العالمين.